Hi, everyone. I would like to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity to present some of our work to you guys today. I am Erica Reeves. I'm with Reverigen Biopharma, which is a local biopharma located here in Rockville, Maryland, with technology that was originally developed at Children's National Medical Center under Eric Hoffman, Kanabuena Nagaraju, and John McCall. So our first foray into drug development is we created a program in order to create a steroid replacement for prednisone in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So briefly, just so you guys have a rough idea of how prednisone works, is it's got kind of multiple molecular mechanisms of actions that's occurring within the cell. One of the main ones is that the steroid translocates through the cellular membrane, binds to its receptor, where there it can either inhibit anti-inflammatory or pro-inflammatory proteins, which is where a lot of the efficacy is believed to come from, or it can translocate to the nucleus, bind to specific regions within the DNA, and activate or inhibit gene expression. These are what's kind of typically believed to what's causing the side effects. So what we did is we took a general steroidal backbone and mucked around with the chemistry. And one of the things that we did was we, on the 11th position of carbon on the steroidal backbone, is we turned it from a hydroxyl group into a double bond. And this is believed to be key to a lot of the transcriptional response of traditional steroids. And then what we also did is mucked around with the chemistry in the northeast corner to really be able to optimize it for its anti-inflammatory properties as well as its membrane stabilization. So what we were doing was we were trying to select a lead compound that was able to maintain some of the effects of prednisone, but also be able to get rid of some of the key molecular functions in order to be able to finesse away some of the side effects. And so some of the things that we wanted to keep was its ability to function as an NF-kappa B inhibitor, which is where a lot of its anti-inflammatory properties come from. GR-mediated transcription is one of the things we were trying to get rid of. Another mechanism is its ability, prednisone is able to interact with a lot of other hormone receptors, in which we wanted to limit as well. In addition to this, we were able to optimize for membrane stabilization properties. We wanted something that was going to be not toxic to the cell, as well as have good bioavailability. So using a series of in vitro assays, we were able to identify a couple of compounds that function very similar to prednisone in myoblasts and myotubes. And as you can see by the red circles, is we also were using prednisone in all of our studies, so we were able to kind of correlate the outputs of these different assays to how well it functioned with prednisone, and were able to identify kind of two main compounds, VBP6, VBP15, that were functioning very similar, like prednisone. And we ended up picking VBP15 as our lead compound because it had better bioavailability and developmental characteristics. So one of the things we wanted to first do was kind of understand if this compound was able to inhibit inflammation across multiple indications, not just DMD, but just, you know, proof of concept that there was biological activity, just as prednisone is used in numerous indications. We wanted to see if ours was going to be active as well. So in a variety of animal models for rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's, asthma, we tested our compound and were able to show that there was biological activity. I'm not showing this data today in order to keep this talk nice and succinct, but I just wanted to let you know that this was a very important proof of concept for us to know that it's not just a one-hit wonder within Duchenne, but then also that we could use this for a variety of things. What we did want to do is ask very specific questions of how is it related to Duchenne was, how does it perform in the mouse model of DMD? What are the key side effects, such as stunting of growth, reduction of bone size, immunosuppression, and how this relates to prednisone? Because, again, these are going to be a lot of the things that are going to be clinically relevant to patients and who are on prednisone. And also, do you see improvement in muscle function and strength so that you're getting efficacy as well? So two trials were conducted in the laboratory of Dr. Nagaraju. The first one was a 4-month of daily oral dosing in which we started treatment at 10 to 12 weeks. We tried three different doses of our compound at 5 mg per kg, 15, and 45, and we compared this to the standard treatment dosage of 5 milligrams prednisone. We were unable to go higher with prednisone to really be able to do a dose-to-dose comparison. That's just because these animals are very susceptible to stress, and long-term treatment with prednisone actually causes them to die. So we stuck to the highest dose that we could get that was almost similar to what's being treated in patients, but at a dose that we were able to treat them as long as we were able to. The second study was a short acute study of 2 months, and this was really starting to treat mice at a younger age, really starting at 2 weeks, and this was to really hit kind of the necrosis, regeneration, degeneration phase of the MDX animal model. We used slightly different dosing regimens to, again, really kind of finesse out that therapeutic window with our compound, in which we used 5, 15, and 30 mg per kilogram, and again, compared it to 5 milligrams of prednisolone. I'm going to show you some of the data from the second study, which I think is really going to be what's really interesting and shows some of the efficacy, as well as how we differ on the side effect profile compared to traditional steroids. So let me take a few moments to kind of step you through this slide. On the top two panel, on the top panel, you're going to see things for absolute strength. This is just the measurement outright. The bottom panel is strength as it's normalized to body weight. And this is important because animals on prednisone lose body weight. So you do want to normalize for the fact that they are weighing less as well. The top and bottom panel on your left-hand side are going to be grip strength. So this, again, is a measurement of strength, whereas those on the left is in vitro force contraction, which is a measurement of function of the muscle, both of which are important. So when you're looking at absolute strength for both, you see a dose-dependent increase in both strength and in function in VBP-treated animals, whereas you see a reduction with prednisolone. And this is because they are losing weight, so their overall strength is lower because of it. But once you normalize to strength, or once you normalize to body weight, you do see an improvement with prednisone. And pretty much what this boils down to is that per unit weight, prednisone is able to increase strength. So what this might translate to is that they'll show improvement in a 6-minute walk test. And then you also see the same increase with VBP-15. But the difference is that because you're seeing increase in absolute strength in addition with VBP-15, is that you might also see a better functional improvement in patients so that you're better able to better hand strength and functioning in your day-to-day activities. So one of the other things that we're really, you know, looking at instead of efficacy is also really able to distinguish our compound for prednisone as it relates to the side effect profile. And so I picked a couple of the endpoints that would be more relevant to the families here. So one of them is stunted growth. So everyone knows that kids on prednisone, they're shorter compared to age-matched controls. So animals also have the same effect when they're on prednisone for long periods of time. So in this 2-month study, mice who were receiving prednisolone showed roughly a 7% reduction in body length compared to vehicle. And you can see based on the picture there that they look, you can physically see that they're smaller. And then you can see the bar graph of where it is, whereas there's no effect on body length with VBP-15 at any dose. If you look at the x-rays of the tibia length, which is one of the major bones affected by prednisolone, is that you see also, again, about a 7% shortening of the bone length. And again, so it's not only just they're losing body weight, but they are also losing bone length when they're treated with prednisolone, but neither of these effects are being seen with VBP-15. So we wanted to look at kind of disease markers such as inflammation within the muscle to see how VBP is functioning as it relates to its anti-inflammatory properties. So we measured using optical imaging an output that is indicative of inflammation within the muscle. So by using a target of cathepsin, so cathepsin is a protease within the muscle that is secreted during inflammation and necrosis. And so its presence is an indicator of inflammation. So we, after 2 months of treatment, injected mice with a marker that once it came into contact with cathepsin, it would cleave and then create a fluorescent signal so that you can see at the bottom, blue, purples are indicators of low inflammation, where up to red is an indicator of high inflammation. And so the MDX mouse already inherently, without any treatment, has high levels of inflammation occurring on in its muscle. And you see a dose-dependent decrease of inflammation in both response to VBP15 as well as prednisolone. So if you want to look at muscle histology to kind of give it more of a functional thing, we were able to see that there's increased muscle fiber degeneration and fibrosis in untreated mice compared to normal healthy mice. Prednisolone actually augments this amount of degeneration and fibrosis within the skeletal muscle, and that VBP15 does not increase fibrosis, which means you're going to get a better, healthier muscle, and it's regenerating a little bit more normal compared to prednisolone-treated. One of the interesting things that has been coming more to the attention in the lab and everything out of Raju's lab is the effect of prednisone on cardiac muscle within the MDX system, especially in that at these young of a mice, there's normally not an effect in the heart. However, prednisolone treatment for chronic periods of time is actually inducing fibrosis within the heart. And they think a lot of that is because of the pro-fibrotic, though anti-inflammatory properties of it. So if you take the heart and body mass ratio of these mice who have been treated for 2 months, you're able to see that there's actually an increase in its heart mass to its overall body weight in response to prednisolone, where you're not seeing that with our compound. But you're also seeing a tremendous increase in the percent fibrosis seen within the cardiac output. And so while heart problems are becoming important, especially for Duchenne's later on, we're not quite sure how relevant this is necessarily to younger patients, but it's always going to be better to have a heart-healthy compound, which it looks like our drug is functioning in that manner. So right now we're at the very end of our preclinical stages. We're hoping to be filing our IND at the end of this year, hopefully hitting our phase 1 clinical trials early 2014. And as many of you know, it's not an easy clinical path in which to do. Steroids right now are considered the standard of care. However, they're not FDA approved. Plenty of literature out there on how they're able to increase strength and prolong ambulation, but there are a lot of side effects associated with long-term use of steroids. Some of the more key things, you know, such as behavioral changes, weight gain, glucose intolerance, and all of these things, really make it hard for patients to want to stay on this for long periods of time. So what we're really trying to do is create a compound that you would take very similar to how you would take steroids, so oral daily dosing, with something that is as efficacious as prednisone, however, with a better safety profile, so that it'll be easier to take it long term. So really, at this point in time, we're working with some base case assumptions for the clinical development. So really, efficacy is going to be comparable to prednisone, and upside would be that it's superior, but right now we're going with the assumption that it's equivalent. However, where our niche is really going to be is that it's going to have a better safety profile so that you can really be on this much longer. And this will also, though, translate to much longer clinical trials because of it, because it is going to take longer to be able to dissociate our compound from prednisone as it relates to these side effects. So one of the things after we did earlier this year and kind of the end of last year, so we spent some time talking to a lot of the clinical experts within the field to really kind of assess the idea of, can we do a placebo-controlled trial? Because it's going to be the most clear-cut way to be able to do this and get FDA approval. And there seemed to be a general consensus that we would be able to do so as long as we kept our clinical trials to 6 months or under. So we're looking at a phase 2 trial of 6 months to be able to kind of just understand proof of concept for efficacy. However, we expect to really be able to have to do longer-term studies in order to identify our safety profile. So our phase 3 will be longer, looking at about 12 to 18 months to really be able to assess the functional outcomes and the longer-term side effects. So that our phase 3 is probably looking to be more like a non-inferiority trial with an arm of probably 0.75 mg per kg prednisone. So this is just kind of the general timeline of our clinical strategy. Like I said, we're wrapping up our preclinical phase this year, and we'll hopefully be filing our IND at the end of 2013, which means we will be kicking off our phase 1 in normal, healthy adults so that we would be able to assess the general safety of our compound. do a bridging study quickly into pediatrics to be able to make sure that what we learn from our phase one carries over to children in the pediatric population. And then really going into our phase 2A B study, which is really going to be our proof of concept as far as it relates to efficacy. And this is, again, kind of looking to be a six-month placebo-controlled trial. And assuming that goes well, we'll head into the large phase 3 trial. And then there's, you know, always going to be some subsequent studies that go on with this. So for time's sake, I'm going to go ahead and stop here. And I want to first thank the entire Reveragen team. We're a very tiny company, so it takes a lot of support from everyone of the team. So Dr. Ed Connor, who is our CEO and president, John McCall, Eric Hoffman, Kanabuena Nagaraju, all of Children's National Medical Center, who are our founders and the brilliant minds behind this endeavor, and some of my colleagues who I love working with, Jesse Damsker and Karen King. And I would also like to thank Chris Heyer of Children's National Medical Center, who works under Raju, who is the one who generated all of the MDX mouse data. Thank you.